The first thing, and it took me so long to realize it, and then I was kicking myself, was like, you are not at any disadvantage not coming from a business background. I think the biggest thing was that I had it in my head that I was at a disadvantage not coming from a business background.
Hi, welcome back to Office Chats, a podcast presented by Madam Blue. I'm your host, Valeria, and today's guest is Erica Cole, the founder and CEO of No Limits. After losing her leg in a car accident in 2018, Erica found that her prosthetic leg wasn't compatible with her existing wardrobe. This sparked her journey to solving this problem and creating an empowering business with a mission to help others. Through a stylish selection of adaptive clothing, No Limits is redefining fashion and function for wheelchair users, people with limited dexterity, sensory sensitivities, and other disabilities. I love chatting with Erica and found her story so inspiring. To start her business as a junior in college is impressive in and of itself, let alone after a life-changing accident. Her work ethic, creativity, and confidence as a young entrepreneur is something I found really inspiring. She's proved that there is no limit to what you can accomplish with the right mindset and effort. It doesn't matter how old you are, what you studied in school, or what other people may think. I know it sounds cheesy, but if you have faith in yourself and don't back down from challenges, you can really do anything. And Erica is proof of that. So let's get into the show. I'd love to start at the beginning of what led you on the path to entrepreneurship, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about your personal experience and how it inspired the creation of your business.
Absolutely. So I grew up not really knowing that entrepreneurship was a path, to be honest. Like, this is something that other people do, but not me. I got my degree in chemistry. I actually was in a car accident in 2018. It was my junior year of college. And lost my left leg just below the knee in the accident. So I was still like, I'm going to be a chemist. I finished my chemistry degree, and I was at the same time recovering from my accident, trying to get on with a normal life, but I was struggling with clothing. So I was wearing like sweatpants that were like three sizes too big for me because I couldn't find anything else that would fit over the top of my new prosthetic. And it was setting the tone for the rest of the day when I was struggling with that. So I just went to a sewing machine, started altering my own clothes. I had been altering clothes for myself since I was pretty little. Kind of long story short, I started altering for some friends who are also amputees, then started altering for kind of the broader disability community and decided to start my company called No Limits from there. And it just kept growing and growing. And in the summer of 2020, I had my job offer at Los Alamos National Lab. And I also had an offer from Target Incubator to be part of their incubator program. And I was like, I just have to see how far I can take this. And now 3 years later, we're going strong. So that's kind of accidentally fell into entrepreneurship, but I'm glad I'm here.
That's awesome. What role did starting this business play in helping you adapt to your new normal and find purpose within the disability community?
It was two things for me. One, it was an opportunity to connect with this new community that I was a part of. And the disability community was so welcoming. I went to a lot of like amputee support groups, and I was in some Facebook groups. And I found like I was just healing faster emotionally by being part of these groups and talking to other people who understood what I was going through. So the business was an opportunity for me to do that. And it was also a way for me to kind of take ownership of what happened too, you know, by act of creation and making something new, it allowed me to assign a purpose to what happened. And now I'm fortunate I get to live that every day and engage with this community in so many different ways that I wouldn't have otherwise. It's been a really cool journey in that way.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I want to kind of go back to before the Target Incubator opportunity came about, like How did you go from sewing for yourself and others to deciding like this could actually be a legitimate business? Like, what were the first steps that you took to kind of get the ball rolling?
Yeah, that's a great question. So honestly, I saw a flyer at my school. It was a pitch competition. They're like, you don't have to have a product. You just have to have an idea. Like, come pitch us an idea. And the prize was like a $500 scholarship. And I was, you know, college student at the time. I was like, yeah, I could use a $500 scholarship. Let's go see. Because I was altering clothes for myself. I was like, let's go see what this is. And I ended up winning that competition. I did another startup competition like 2 weeks later and ended up winning that one too. And at that point, I went to the University of Iowa. The entrepreneurial community of Iowa City just kind of like took me under their wing and they're like, there's something here. Like, it took someone else telling me that, hey, you should maybe look into this a little more seriously. And I did. And so I was like, the whole time I was like, I'm just going to have this as like a side business to my chemistry career. I'm going to do this as a little alterations business. Maybe it'll be an Etsy thing. I wasn't planning on it being my career until I got that kind of validation from Target Incubator. And like, there really isn't anything out there that's like this. Maybe you should take another look at this. And then I think there was just like a youthful naivety to it. Also, to be honest with you, like, you know, you're 23 and don't really understand what kind of a risk that is to like turn down a stable job and start your own company, but I'm glad I made it.
I mean, you don't know until you try, right? And it's almost like ignorance can be bliss sometimes when you're taking on a business like that.
Oh, for sure. And like, you know, you're used to the college lifestyle. So like eating ramen for another couple of years wasn't like a strange thing for me. You know what I mean? Like living that budget lifestyle and like not really getting paid and working side hustles while you're building your company. Like that's so much easier to do from college, I feel like, before you get used to like actually having adult money than it would be to go back from having a career job and then start your company after that. So for sure, I think it was easier at that point to take that leap.
Yeah. Well, it seems like winning the pitch competition at Iowa Ideasorum seemed to kind of have been a turning point for your company. Can you explain how that propelled No Limits forward and gave you the confidence to pursue this venture like wholeheartedly?
That first competition really opened my eyes to like that entrepreneurship was a path. When I was that junior in college and I heard the word entrepreneurship, I thought like Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs, you know what I mean? Like those, I hadn't been exposed to it. That wasn't something that had come up in my school or otherwise. And so it's that first competition opened my eyes to like, this is even a possible path. And then I think as I started to do more competitions, I was really trying to validate the actual business itself, you know, kind of testing the waters. They let me kind of dip my toes in before making a full commitment because I was still in school. And then slowly I was convinced that like, this is a problem. There's not really anybody else in the space that's solving it right now. I'm uniquely positioned to be able to do so. And I was like kind of hungry for that challenge also and wanting to prove myself. Mm-hmm. It was a very different path than chemistry. You know, I had the job offer. I could look at, it was a national lab. So I could look at the pay scale and see like, here are the salaries I would make. And I could like literally map out the rest of my life. But there was something that was attractive too about not knowing what that could look like, but also not having a cap on that potential of what it could be.
And also what you could accomplish, right? Because your business helps so many people, empowers them. And that's kind of like a priceless feeling, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I can look at the business now and be like, none of this would exist if I hadn't started it. You know, that's like extraordinarily satisfying for me. Mm-hmm. And this impact wouldn't be here if we weren't working on this.
Yeah. I have just one more quick follow-up regarding the pitches. So because you didn't have any business experience and like you won your first two pitches, that's pretty impressive. Like, how did you prepare and become confident and comfortable speaking to potential investors or even just like judges at a competition?
That's a great question. One, I was kind of used to presenting in the chemistry space, actually. I was very data-driven with the company early on. because that's, you know, a scientific method. That's like what I had been doing and what I had been trained for. So I was like, okay, well, these are the market numbers. This is, you know, e-commerce average. If we built it this way, you know, I built that model very early on and then kept asking myself why. And so I could answer like five whys behind every number on my spreadsheet. And that really helped me prepare for, because the biggest questions that investors ask are like, is there the market size? Is this really going to be scalable? Is it, you know, why are you uniquely qualified to serve this? And so taking that data-driven approach early on helped prepare me a lot for those pitch competitions, and also just engaging with people who are a couple steps ahead of me at every point. And I still try to do that, like have a founder network around me that's like people that are a couple steps ahead, people a couple steps behind. And like this entrepreneurial community, founder community, it was super important to preparing me for those too.
Can you walk me through the research and design and manufacturing process that goes into creating new clothing for customers? Because I imagine there's a whole set of different standards and considerations that have to go into creating your pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. So our process kind of from beginning to end, first we're looking at a segment of the adaptive population that we want to serve. So I'll use our wheelchair pants as an example that launched fairly recently. We wanted to launch a wheelchair collection a year and a half ago. We just launched them about a month ago. So it took a long time to develop because first we're like, okay, we need to talk to potential customers. We need to see what the issues are. We had had a lot of customer feedback that people wanted wheelchair pants. And they're like, okay, well, what does that mean to you? So we go through kind of a first round of data gathering. We go to a sewing machine, make some samples, then we go through another round of fit testing, validate kind of the features that we need in the garment, as well as the fit. And the wheelchair products specifically were a challenge because the body changes over time when you're a wheelchair user. So you're typically you have some atrophy in the leg muscles, but the hips are a little bit more spread. You're in that seated position all the time, and the waist size doesn't necessarily change significantly. So it's a different fit standard than has been used for able bodies. We had to develop that ourselves, as well as we have some unique closures that we had to source. So we're validating features, validating fit. After we go through several iterations of that and feel ready for full-scale manufacturing, we send those samples and a tech pack to a manufacturer, and we try to source from several to get the right pricing and right materials and find the factory that can work for us, and then eventually place the purchase order and go through with full-scale manufacturing. But we involve customers at every step. We also involve occupational therapists at every step because we want to make sure that we're not doing any harm when we're introducing these very new different products, especially to folks that have some medical conditions going on. So it's just a lot of feedback loops kind of along the way. And right now too, we're already designing like version two of the wheelchair pants, and we just launched a couple months ago. So it's a constant process of feedback and iteration.
Yeah, it seems like that continuous improvement mindset and like the problem solving, I feel like that all kind of appeals to probably your scientific, like data-driven side of your brain. Is that something you really enjoy?
I do. Yes, absolutely. And I love looking at consumer behavior, and like we're on Shopify and they have just incredible analytics, and looking through that and being able to point to, okay, we made these changes and then this is what that meant for sales, and this is what that meant for repeat customers. Being able to assign numbers to all of those things that feel soft is really satisfying to me. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of your customers, can you share like what your marketing and sales distribution looks like today and how it's evolved from when you started?
Yes. So we actually started the company on Kickstarter. So we were raising to do our first manufacturing run. And then after that, we moved to an e-commerce platform. So we're still, the vast majority of our sales are on our e-commerce platform. We do all the things that a traditional clothing company would do, from digital ads, influencer marketing, things like that. Obviously, making sure that they're tailored to our disability space. We also have a community-oriented approach. We engage with a lot of like adaptive sports centers and adaptive fashion shows and places where our community is meeting. Making sure we're present in those spaces has been really important to our growth. And then the other thing is engaging with large retailers who want to be able to serve this space authentically. You know, the most accessible version of what No Limits is being able to find these products where you're already shopping. So we just launched with Walmart.com recently, and it's been a really cool experience because folks are already shopping there. And so to be able to add an adaptive product to the cart when you're shopping for your everyday items is such a lower lift than asking someone to make a separate purchase on someone's own e-commerce site, for example. You know, like being able to group those items together is extremely powerful in showing that adaptive kind of belongs as a category alongside all of these other categories within apparel.
Yeah. And so can you run me through where No Limits is currently available for people to buy, and maybe where are you seeing people shop your clothing more than other options?
Yeah, well, it's a little early to say. We launched a lot of new spaces recently. We're starting to see more traction on Amazon. There was a lot of search volume for adaptive products, but no one really serving those searches. So we're starting to see Amazon pick up. We're seeing Walmart.com pick up. We like launched this week QVC.com. So we're excited to see where that goes. And we're also, of course, on our own e-commerce site as well.
Congrats. That's a lot of exciting growth.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
What would you say were some of the biggest initial hurdles you faced to get to where you are now, where you're seeing a lot of traction with different retailers, you know, you're continuously improving the product? How did you overcome any initial obstacles to get to where you are now?
Yeah, supply chain was probably the biggest hurdle early on, the first hurdle that we faced. That led to hurdle number two, which was kind of like fundraising, having capital to actually start and grow. So we were in the middle of COVID. It was a really difficult supply chain time for anyone. And then compounded with like, we are such small fish looking for technical apparel products that manufacturers aren't used to doing. Like, it's not a normal pair of jeans. They have to kind of train the line of sewers making this product. So finding a manufacturer that would work with us in the first place took several months to find someone who was comfortable with MOQs, comfortable with taking a risk on a small brand. And also, you know, we felt very strongly that this product needed to have an affordable price point to make it the most accessible that it can be. Eventually, talked to enough people. I don't really have any insight or like magic wands there. There are some agents that you can find that help coordinate overseas manufacturing. So sometimes that's an easier way to go than doing it on your own if you're a small early stage business. And that's what we ended up doing. We worked with an agent that had a lot of manufacturers in Bangladesh. So that's how we got started. And then hurdle number two was the capital it took to get started. And that's where Kickstarter came in. And it's a beautiful thing because you can pull cash forward, be able to produce the product you're looking for. You're also gathering information on your customer, your demographics, you're learning about Facebook marketing, you're learning about how to market this product at the same time as you're pre-selling. And then those customers don't expect their product for a few months. So it's a great way to get started. And actually, it's a great way to continue to grow. So we're preparing to launch another Kickstarter in September to launch a new product line. And it's become kind of part of our growth strategy. And mm-hmm. It's a great way to reduce waste also, because you know exactly what sizes and colors to produce before you actually have to commit to them. So I think it's an avenue worth exploring for folks who are developing products and not quite sure how to make that first purchase order or get that first batch of inventory.
I've had a couple of guests on before who've had really great experiences with that and were able to kind of build a community as well of people who wanted to support them and were interested in what they were doing. So it kind of had that market validation as well that you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. We were able to use that when we went out to fundraise too and be like, look, we raised this much on Kickstarter. We have all of this information, where we wouldn't have been able to fundraise as early as we did without that.
Yeah. Well, not only have you navigated startup competitions, you know, the Kickstarter campaign has been successful as well, but I would imagine some of our listeners recognize you and the company from Shark Tank. Can you tell us what your experience on Shark Tank was like, and maybe any tips for pitching or presenting your ideas in those high stakes environments?
Yeah, that was, I mean, such a unique experience. They actually found us on Kickstarter. So a producer reached out after seeing our Kickstarter campaign. They were like, have you ever considered being on Shark Tank? And at the time, that was super daunting because we hadn't even really sold any product. You know, we hadn't delivered any products yet. We had sold quite a few on Kickstarter. And then anyway, I kind of laughed and I was like, yeah, of course. Like, as soon as you say you have a startup, everybody's like, have you been on Shark Tank? Like, it was almost a joke, you know, it's like, and then, you know, there I was like 6 months later flying out to LA, and they did a very good job of kind of like working me through the process. That 90-second pitch at the beginning is pretty much all that you have to present. And then everything else is a genuine conversation around your product and business. And it was the first time that they were seeing me. It was like everything that they tell you that Shark Tank is, it actually is. It was an extremely genuine experience. We didn't film for very long before we got the deal, and it felt like an investor conversation, but an investor conversation where there are five different investors that are, you know, normally if you're having these conversations, they're all on the same team, but they're all kind of like working against each other. They're all kind of talking over each other at the same time too, which they do a really good job of editing out, I think, in the actual show. So it was like, whose questions am I answering? Which ones do I have good answers for? Which sharks do I want to get a deal with? And we had, I think, just the best possible outcome you can have from Shark Tank. We got a deal with Mark Cuban and Emma Greed, who's the co-founder of Good American with Khloe Kardashian. And she's just like, so my hero, such a role model in this apparel, inclusive apparel space. It's super cool to have her on our side. And preparing for it, I prepared for it just like I did any other investor meeting. It helped that I had a little bit of fundraising experience under my belt before going on Shark Tank, because they didn't ask anything super out of the realm of normal for investor meetings. So there are some conferences that I went to early on in building the business. I think one specifically was Midwest Tech Connect, and I'm sure they have different versions of that for different regions, but it was like I pitched like 15 investors each day, 2 days in a row. So 30 pitches in 2 days, but it let me really refine that pitch. And then whatever questions that they were asking at the end of the pitch, I started incorporating into the pitch itself, until instead of questions at the end, we were having genuine conversation.
That's a good tip too, to kind of include the answers to the questions you know they're going to ask in your initial statement, so that you're saving time, you're getting to more like meaty discussions faster. That's good advice. You walked away with a deal from Mark and Emma for $100,000 for 10% equity in your business. How did making that deal impact No Limits?
There were two main impacts that it had. One is there was a legitimacy that came to No Limits after that deal. And it was just so interesting to me, because we're the same company as we were before we went on Shark Tank, right? But now we go into these conversations with retailers, and there's a lot more confidence from the retailer side, I feel. Like, there's a lot more confidence in those conversations, because they're like, oh, you've been on Shark Tank. You've got Mark and Emma on your side. Like, you'll be able to fill this PO if we place it. And I think that's a concern that retailers have when they're looking at startup companies, is like, if we place this PO, are they actually going to be able to fulfill it? Are they actually going to be able to meet our vendor requirements? Is this PO going to put them out of business? Because there's like everything around that too. Are they going to be compliant? So there's a lot more confidence from that perspective. So we got a lot of partners through Shark Tank. And the other thing is, Emma has been on that path between where we are now and this, you know, billion-dollar valuation. So that path is a lot clearer to me now than it was when I was starting the company than it was without her mentorship. And that's like, I mean, she saved me probably years of trial and error and heartache at this point, because there's like kind of a roadmap to building to this huge company, which has been invaluable.
That's amazing. So obviously No Limits has come a long way from its inception, as we've discussed. What does your team look like today, and what strategies do you plan to implement to scale your business?
We have 5 full-time and 4 part-time now. And I'm really proud of the team that we've built. It's been incredibly rewarding to gather all of these people who are so passionate about adaptive clothing. I think that's one of the coolest things. My team works so hard, and I'm really grateful for that. To scale the business, we're really looking to grow retail partnerships and looking to be that resource where people go to for adaptive apparel. So we've launched kind of 4 core adaptive categories. So we've launched things for people with lower limb difference. We've launched a wheelchair collection, a sensory friendly collection, and a limited dexterity collection. So launching more categories underneath the umbrella of adaptive, but also going deeper within each category so everyone can come and find something that represents their style too, because we're taking kind of a capsule collection approach to everything, that is, we're able to offer more styles and colors, then we're able to welcome more people into the No Limits community.
I think the categories you're building out are so smart too, just to provide as much value to different members of the disability community. There's one though you mentioned that I'm not super familiar with. So you said you also create clothing is it sensory friendly? Is that the right term?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you kind of give an example of what that looks like?
Definitely. Our sensory friendly collection was designed for people with sensory processing disorder, which is commonly found in folks with autism or ADHD, but it can exist on its own. It's where someone interprets a stimulus as a distraction, an irritation, or it can even be a pain. So we eliminate tags, seams, we use moisture wicking, thermoregulating fabrics, and all of our sensory friendly pieces. Some folks like a degree of compression. It's kind of like the same concept behind a weighted blanket, and that's kind of regulating and soothing. But some folks prefer to feel like they're not wearing anything at all. So we kind of cater to both of those groups through slightly different designs within the sensory friendly collection. And we're just designing to make folks a little bit more comfortable throughout the day through sensory friendly options. We're like, you shouldn't have to think about the clothes that you're wearing every second of the day. And also there should be options for adults, because we were finding, you know, the sensory friendly clothing tended to stop after kid sizing, but people aren't growing out of sensory processing challenges. It continues on through adulthood. So we are excited to be able to offer those in adult sizes.
That's interesting. And you mentioned, you know, a lot of testing goes into creating final versions of these products. What has it been like connecting with the disability community and ensuring that the designs truly address their needs, their feedback, and their preferences?
It's been, I mean, just incredibly rewarding. And it's kind of sad. Like, this space has been ignored for so long that we are having no problems finding folks that are like super ready to talk about this. Like, I'm so thankful. Every conversation that we have, people have strong preferences and they are not scared to share it. We'll get email. I mean, like, we got an email the other day. And I was like, this person had to sit here for, you know, at least an hour. Like, this email, if you put it into a book, was probably like, you know, a 15-page essay on what they want out of a wheelchair pin. And we're like, this is amazing. Like, people are so passionate in this space and they know exactly what they want. So it's been really cool to have people reaching out. And like, now I think we're starting to almost develop a reputation for like, oh, No Limits, they're the folks that listen. So more people are reaching out and saying like, hey, could you develop this? I really need this. We're not stopping at version one either. It's like, now that we have these out, we still do focus groups on the existing products and are working on a, you know, better stuff for version 2.
That's great. It seems like they've been waiting. A lot of customers have been waiting so long for a company like this.
Yes, yeah. It's cool that people are so passionate about it.
Well, I want to call out something again that about your journey that I find really inspiring, which is that you don't have a business background. We've talked about how you had a very, stable career opportunity in chemistry, and that was your major. So how did you learn the tools of the trade in business, and what advice would you give to those wanting to start their own despite not coming from that background?
I'm going to take this backwards. I think the first thing, and it took me so long to realize it, and then I was kicking myself, was like, you are not at any disadvantage not coming from a business background. I think the biggest thing was that I had it in my head that I was at a disadvantage not coming from a business background. And that mentality was the disadvantage. I don't think any degree could prepare you for what this journey is. So I don't want anyone who doesn't have a business degree to be discouraged. I think actually the strength is knowing your customer very well, knowing your market very well is better than any business degree that you could have when you're starting your own business. And then I also, as I kind of alluded to before, I've learned the most from people who are building businesses at the same time that I am. I think it's super important to have a mentor. It is a very different environment building a startup now than it was even a few years ago. And that perspective you can only get from having founder to founder relationships.
Well, I love that your company's mission is to improve people's lives and empower them to feel their best. I think that's such an amazing aspect of clothing. Like, it really does kind of put you in the right mindset when you're starting your day. So I'm curious what you're most proud of achieving with No Limits so far.
I have like a teary proud moment every time we get a review or a message along the lines of, there's one that sticks out and was like, I have been an amputee for 20 years. I haven't worn pants in 20 years. This is the first pair of pants that I've been able to wear as an amputee. And I'm like, okay, that's when we're hitting that bullseye in terms of mission, company alignment. So moments like that, I also, something that's really cool, I think, about our business is we have this customer behavior of someone will get an item delivered and then they'll come back and buy 5, 6, 7 more of that particular category, like the day after their item was delivered. So they tried it a day and they're like, yep, this is my everyday wear now. And that's like, I just get chills when I see it. 'Cause I'm like, this is why we did this. This is why we're making this, is because people need these clothes. So those are the things that I'm most proud of.
Yeah, that's incredible. I like to close out each episode by asking our guests to provide a few words of wisdom. You've already done a great job of that, but I still want to ask you, what is your biggest piece of advice for founders and entrepreneurs?
I think there are so many points, so many exit ramps for entrepreneurs. When things get tough, it's like so easy to be like, I want to give this up. I want to quit. But if you stick through that, there's something that happens in entrepreneurs when cornered. You start to open your eyes to other possibilities of what could happen. In that creative, almost desperate state, the coolest things happen. And it's happened again and again. And I've seen it, it's happened to me. I've seen it happen to several other entrepreneur friends where you're like, I have no other options left. So I'm going to try this off the wall thing. And then that off the wall thing gets you to, the next 6 months of runway or gets you to that next milestone. That is a super cool, super normal thing that happens for entrepreneurs. And I promise that there are so many cool things on the other side of that corner that you might find yourself in from time to time. So sticking through it is where great entrepreneurs are made.
I love it. It's like that quote, I'm probably butchering it, but something where like magic only happens outside of your comfort zone. Like when you're really challenged, that's when you find the most opportunities and kind of get to the next level of your career or relationship, whatever the situation may be.
Absolutely.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for joining me on Office Chats. I've loved learning more about your journey and growing No Limits. It's so inspiring to me. I'm sure the listeners will love it as well. Can you please let everyone know where they can keep up with you and No Limits online and on social media?
Yes, absolutely. You can follow us at No Limits. Limits is spelled LIMBITS, just because I'm an amputee and it's a little bit of a pun. So you can find us at No Limits on Instagram, and then we're also at no-limits.com. You can find us there.
Thank you so much to Erica for joining me on the podcast, and thank you to everyone listening. Be sure to leave a rating and review, and I hope you join us next week for a new episode of Office Chats.